Okay, so now let's move on to why SIBO testing is so important. So IBS affects 10 to 14%, and one study I've seen even shows up to 20% of the population. So like we mentioned, this is about one up to about one fifth of people actually have irritable bowel syndrome, and SIBO is a major cause of irritable bowel syndrome, and most people are just told to live with the IBS, to take laxatives or stool softeners to deal with the symptoms, or things like GASX to monitor and manage the gas and bloating. So being able to reverse this in people is completely life-changing. We also see that SIBO causes intestinal permeability, and we looked at that in a previous lesson, as well as SIBO and intestinal permeability cause autoimmune disease. Autoimmune disease is so large when we look at the number of different types of autoimmune disease and how many people are diagnosed and undiagnosed with autoimmune disease. It's estimated that Hashimoto's, for example, is the number one reason of hypothyroidism, and most people are not even testing for Hashimoto's. They're just looking at TSH and monitoring thyroid by just giving something like levothyroxine or Synthroid thyroid medication without actually looking to see if there's autoimmune disease. And this is done in conventional medicine because there's not a lot that can be done other than managing the autoimmune disease. So because we know with functional medicine the root cause of autoimmune disease is SIBO, as well as some other things we'll cover later, it's really important to test SIBO for autoimmune disease, and we can actually see that the autoimmune disease reverses. So the number of conditions connected to SIBO is large. So we went through some of those in a previous lesson, but that's another reason why we're emphasizing SIBO so early on in this course, is because there's so many different conditions that have SIBO as a major root cause that you will find in functional medicine that you will actually test and treat a huge portion of your population for small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. So it's an important thing to become really, really proficient in. So, in order to talk about the root cause relationship to food poisoning and abdominal surgery, so in order to do that, let's talk a little bit about something called the migrating motor complex. So, in health, what happens is we have our peristaltic action of the gut that basically is designed to propel food through the intestinal tract when we are in a fed state. Now, there are and other contractions of the gut that happen when we're in a fasting state. These other contractions of the gut are controlled by something known as the migrating motor complex. The migrating motor complex basically is a series of contractions that happens when we've been fasting for at least about 2 hours. And the way I look at the migrating motor complex and explain it to my clients is really that it's like the washing machine of the gut. So the purpose of the migrating motor complex is to basically clean out any food debris, anything that's been left over by digestion, as well as if there's microorganisms from the large intestine that have crawled up to the small intestine where they're not supposed to be. The migrating motor complex, when we're in this fasting state, will help to wash those microorganisms out. Now, that's health, right? So if the migrating motor complex does not work, if it's not working for a reason, such as food poisoning, which I'll describe in a moment, then basically the microorganisms from the large intestine crawl up to the small intestine where they're not really supposed to be in high numbers, and that's how the overgrowth occurs. So the link to food poisoning is this. So if we have a parasite or a bacteria, microorganisms that cause food poisoning, what can happen is these microorganisms can release a toxin called cytolethal distending toxin B. And what cytolethal distending toxin B does that's so important is it looks similar, like the structure of it looks very, very similar to a protein in the migrating motor complex. And the protein in the migrating motor complex that looks very similar to CDTB is called vinculin. So vinculin is a protein of the migrating motor complex, and it looks similar to the cytolethal distending toxin B. Now, when we are in our when we have a food poisoning scenario and we have this food poisoning releasing this toxin, our immune system will start attacking that toxin to try to remove it from the body, which is good. The problem is that since this the protein in the toxin looks similar enough to the protein in the migrating motor complex, guess what happens? We have an autoimmune type of reaction where our immune system will start to actually attack the vinculin in the migrating motor complex. And when that happens, we'll actually see the migrating motor complex disrupted. And this has been verified in motility studies. And so when the migrating motor complex is disrupted, then we have the microorganisms that were in the large intestine that have crawled up to the small intestine. And when the migrating motor complex is disrupted, they can't get out. That's how the overgrowth can occur. Abdominal surgery has also been shown to disrupt the migrating motor complex. We also want to consider in abdominal surgery that cesarean sections are very, very common to abdominal surgery. So somebody that has had birth by cesarean section is in a position where they are more likely to develop SIBO. We also want to consider with food poisoning that not everybody will remember every time they have food poisoning. So we want to see when we're asking, you know, when we're asking questions about food poisoning, we want to ask is like if they remember any time like leaving a restaurant and not just getting sick, but really having this feeling of like, wow, that just did not settle well. Because sometimes this the food poisoning can be more minor and maybe we're not going to be projectile vomiting all night, but we could be sick to our stomach and feel ill from food. That could be a minor form of food poisoning that could also lead to SIBO. So in this module, we're going to focus on two of the most common root causes of IBS. So remember, SIBO, what we're talking about now, is one of the major causes of IBS. And SIFO, which we'll talk about later in the module, is another big root cause of IBS. So when we're saying that the association with SIBO and IBS is important, remember, we said in an earlier lesson that SIBO causes up to about 84% of IBS. There's been a few studies that have looked at the percentage of SIBO and IBS, and there's been some variation in the percentage of how many people with IBS have SIBO. But the strongest study said up to 84% of those with IBS have SIBO. So SIBO is a major, major root cause of IBS, but not the only root cause. SIFO, which we're going to cover later in this particular module, is another big root cause of IBS. Now, most people with IBS will have multiple root causes, just like we see with most disease symptoms. So IBS has many root causes. So SIBO and SIFO are two of them, but we want to make sure that we're considering other causes of IBS, such as microbiome abnormalities. So it could be just a deficiency in the normal flora could cause IBS, parasites and worms, H. pylori and other GI bacteria, gastrointestinal viruses, Clostridium difficile toxin. So we can have a C. diff infection. And typically people will end up in the hospital due to the level of diarrhea they have. But what a lot of people don't realize is that the toxins, once we clear the infection, the toxins can remain behind and the toxins can cause a lot of symptoms. Now, in addition to that, a deficiency in things like stomach acid, pancreatic enzymes, bile acid can all cause IBS. Nutrient deficiency, so we talked earlier in a previous lesson about zinc deficiency and magnesium deficiency and the links between that and things like constipation and GERD, as well as IBS. Infections, so certain infections that we'll cover later in the course, such as Bartonella or Borrelia, can attack the vagal nerve. The herpes virus can do this as well. So if the vagal nerve is attacked, that can cause IBS. Toxic metals, food reactions, histamine intolerance, which basically means we have more histamine coming in to our body than our body can safely eradicate, and that histamine overload can also cause irritable bowel syndrome. So all of these different root causes, we are not going to cover all of these within the context of this module, but we will cover them throughout this course. So when we're thinking about IBS, we want to make sure that we're considering SIBO and SIFO as two of our top root causes, and we're going to cover those in this module, but we want to consider all of these root causes. And in the next few modules, we'll look at tests that are actually going to tell us how to identify some of these other root causes. So we really want to consider anytime we're looking at SIBO or SIFO that we're looking at those things for IBS, we're looking at those conditions for any of the other disease processes we've covered throughout the course, and that we're considering with IBS as well as any of the other disease processes we've talked about so far. So we've kind of given a nod to chronic fatigue and headaches and skin issues and mood issues and autoimmune, all of these things, while all these conditions, while they have SIBO as a possible root cause and as a likely root cause, SIBO is, of course, not the only root cause. So we'll be building this in a way that's going to help you identify how to think of all of the top root causes for any of the disease processes that are walking into your clinical practice. All right, everybody, we'll see you in the next lesson.